Chapter 8. The R. Wilfer family, Reginald Wilfer, is a name with rather a grand sound, suggesting on first acquaintance brasses in country churches, scrolls in stained glass windows, and generally the de Wilfers who came over with the Conqueror. For, it is a remarkable fact in genealogy, that no de anyone's ever came over with anybody else. But, the Reginald Wilfer family were of such commonplace extraction and pursuits, that their forefathers had for generations modestly subsisted on the docks, the excise office, and the custom house, and the existing R. Wilfer was a poor clerk. So poor a clerk, though having a limited salary and an unlimited family, that he had never yet attained the modest object of his ambition, which was, to wear a complete new suit of clothes, hat and boots included, at one time. His black hat was brown, before he could afford a coat, his pantaloons were white at the seams and knees, before he could buy a pair of boots, his boots had worn out before he could treat himself to new pantaloons, and, by the time he worked round to the hat again, that shining modern article roofed in an ancient ruin of various periods. If the conventional cherub could ever grow up and be clothed, he might be photographed as a portrait of Wilfer. His chubby, smooth, innocent appearance was a reason for his being always treated with condescension when he was not put down. A stranger entering his own poor house at about 10 o'clock p.m. might have been surprised to find him sitting up to supper. So boyish was he in his curves and proportions, that his old schoolmaster meeting him in Cheapside, might have been unable to withstand the temptation of caning him on the spot. In short, he was the conventional cherub, after the supposititious shoot just mentioned, rather gray, with signs of care on his expression, and in decidedly insolvent circumstances. He was shy, and unwilling to own to the name of Reginald, as being too aspiring and self-assertive a name. In his signature he used only the initial R and imparted, what it really stood for, to none but chosen friends, under the seal of confidence. Out of this, the facetious habit had arisen in the neighborhood surrounding Mincing Lane of making Christian names for him of adjectives, and participles beginning with R. Some of these were more or less appropriate, as rusty, retiring, ruddy, round, ripe, ridiculous, ruminative. Others derived their point from their want of application, as raging, rattling, roaring, raffish. But, his popular name was Rumpty, which in a moment of inspiration had been bestowed upon him by a gentleman of convivial habits connected with the drug markets, as the beginning of a social chorus, his leading part in the execution, of which had led this gentleman to the temple of fame, and of which the whole expressive burden ran. Rumpty-ittity, ro-dow-dow, sing-toodily, teetily, bow-wow-wow. Apostrophe, thus he was constantly addressed, even in minor notes on business, as Dear Rumpty, in answer to which, he sedately signed himself, Yours truly, R. Wilfer. Apostrophe, he was clerk in the drug house of Chicksey, Veneering, and Stobbles. Chicksey and Stobbles, his former masters, had both become absorbed in Veneering, once their traveler or commission agent, who had signalized his accession to supreme power by bringing into the business a quantity of plate glass window and French polished mahogany partition, and a gleaming and enormous door plate. R. Wilfer locked up his desk one evening, and, putting his bunch of keys in his pocket much, as if it were his peg top, made for home. His home was in the Holloway region north of London, and then divided from it by fields and trees. Between Battle Bridge and that part of the Holloway district in which he dwelt, was a tract of suburban Sahara, where tiles and bricks were burnt, bones were boiled, carpets were beat, rubbish was shot, dogs were fought, and dust was heaped by contractors. Skirting the border of this desert, by the way he took, when the light of its kiln fires made lurid smears on the fog, R. Wilfer sighed, and shook his head. Ah me! Apostrophe apostrophe said he, what might have been, is not what is. Apostrophe, with which commentary on human life, indicating an experience of it not exclusively his own, He made the best of his way to the end of his journey. Mrs. Wilfer was, of course, a tall woman and an angular. Her lord being cherubic, she was necessarily majestic, according to the principle which matrimonially unites contrasts. She was much given to tying up her head in a pocket handkerchief, knotted under the chin. This headgear, in conjunction with a pair of gloves worn within doors, she seemed to consider as at once a kind of armor against misfortune, invariably assuming it when in low spirits or difficulties, and as a species of full dress. It was therefore with some sinking of the spirit that her husband beheld her thus heroically attired, putting down her candle in the little hall, and coming down the doorsteps through the little front court to open the gate for him. Something had gone wrong with the house door, for R. Wilfer stopped on the steps, staring at it, and cried, "Hallo?"
"Yes,
" said Mrs. Wilfer. "The man came himself with a pair of pincers, and took it off, and took it away. He said that as he had no expectation of ever being paid for it, and as he had an order for another lady's school door plate, it was better burnished up, for the interests of all parties." "Perhaps it was, my dear. What do you think?"
"You are master here, R.W.
returned his wife. "It is as you think, not as I do. Perhaps it might have been better if the man had taken the door too?
My dear, we couldn't have done without the door.
Couldn't we?
Why, my dear, could we?
It is as you think, R.W., not as I do."
With those submissive words, the dutiful wife preceded him down a few stairs to a little basement front room, half kitchen, half parlor, where a girl of about 19, with an exceedingly pretty figure and face, but with an impatient and petulant expression both in her face and in her shoulders, which in her sex and at her age are very expressive of discontent, sat playing draughts with a younger girl, who was the youngest of the house of Wilfer. Not to encumber this page by telling off the Wilfers in detail and casting them up in the gross, it is enough for the present that the rest were what is called out in the world, in various ways, and that they were many. So many, that when one of his dutiful children called in to see him, R. Wilfer generally seemed to say to himself, after a little mental arithmetic, "Oh, here's another of 'em." Before adding aloud, "How do you, John, or Susan, as the case might be."
"Well, pigjewiggies," said R.W., "how do you tonight?"
"What I was thinking of, my dear," to Mrs. Wilfer already seated in a corner with folded gloves, "was that as we have let our first floor so well, and as we have now no place in which you could teach pupils, even if pupils," the milkman said he knew of two young ladies of the highest respectability who were in search of a suitable establishment, and he took a card, interposed Mrs. Wilfer, with severe monotony, as if she were reading an act of parliament aloud. "Tell your father, whether it was last Monday, Bella."
"But we never heard any more of it, Ma," said Bella, the elder girl.
"In addition to which, my dear," her husband urged, "if you have no place to put two young persons into,"
"Pardon me," Mrs. Wilfer again interposed. "They were not young persons. Two young ladies of the highest respectability."
"Tell your father, Bella, whether the milkman said so."
"My dear, it is the same thing."
"No, it is not," said Mrs. Wilfer, with the same impressive monotony.
"Pardon me."
"I mean, my dear, it is the same thing as to space."
"As to space.
If you have no space in which to put two youthful fellow creatures, however eminently respectable, which I do not doubt, where are those youthful fellow creatures to be accommodated?"
"I carry it no further than that."
"And solely looking at it," said her husband, making the stipulation at once in a conciliatory, complimentary, and argumentative tone, as I am sure you will agree, my love, from a fellow creature point of view, my dear. Apostrophe, I have nothing more to say, apostrophe, returned Mrs. Wilfer, with a meek renunciatory action of her gloves. It is as you think, R.W., not as I do. Apostrophe, here, the huffing of Miss Bella and the loss of three of her men at a swoop, aggravated by the coronation of an opponent, led to that young lady's jerking the draft board and pieces off the table, which her sister went down on her knees to pick up. Poor Bella. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer. And poor Lavinia, perhaps, my dear? Apostrophe, apostrophe, suggested R. W., pardon me, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer, no. Apostrophe, it was one of the worthy woman's specialities, that she had an amazing power of gratifying her splenetic, or worldly-minded humors, by extolling her own family, which she thus proceeded, in the present case, to do. No, R.W. Lavinia has not known the trial that Bella has known. The trial that your daughter Bella has undergone is, perhaps, without a parallel, and has been borne, I will say, nobly. When you see your daughter Bella in her black dress, which she alone of all the family wears, and when you remember the circumstances which have led to her wearing it, and when you know how those circumstances have been sustained, then, R.W., lay your head upon your pillow and say, poor Lavinia. Apostrophe, here, Miss Lavinia, from her kneeling situation under the table, put in that she didn't want to be poured by Pa, or anybody else. I am sure you do not, my dear, apostrophe, returned her mother, for you have a fine brave spirit. And your sister Cecilia has a fine brave spirit of another kind, a spirit of pure devotion, a beautiful spirit. The self-sacrifice of Cecilia reveals a pure and womanly character, very seldom equaled, never surpassed. I have now in my pocket a letter from your sister Cecilia, received this morning, received 3 months after her marriage, poor child, in which she tells me that her husband must unexpectedly shelter under their roof his reduced aunt. But I will be true to him, Mama, she touchingly writes, I will not leave him, I must not forget that he is my husband. Let his aunt come. If this is not pathetic, if this is not woman's devotion. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the good lady waved her gloves in a sense of the impossibility of saying more, and tied the pocket handkerchief over her head in a tighter knot under her chin. Bella, who was now seated on the rug to warm herself, with her brown eyes on the fire, and a handful of her brown curls in her mouth, laughed at this, and then pouted and half cried. I am sure, apostrophe, said she, though you have no feeling for me, Pa, I am one of the most unfortunate girls that ever lived. You know how poor we are, it is probable he did, having some reason to know it. Comma, and what a glimpse of wealth I had, and how it melted away, and how I am here in this ridiculous morning which I hate, a kind of a widow who never was married. And yet you don't feel for me. Yes you do, yes you do. Apostrophe, this abrupt change was occasioned by her father's face. She stopped to pull him down from his chair in an attitude highly favorable to strangulation, and to give him a kiss, and a pat or two on the cheek. But you ought to feel for me, you know, Pa. Apostrophe, my dear, I do. Apostrophe, yes, and I say you ought to. If they had only left me alone, and told me nothing about it, it would have mattered much less. But that nasty Mr. Lightwood feels it his duty, as he says, to write and tell me what is in reserve for me, and then I am obliged to get rid of George Sampson. Apostrophe, here, Lavinia, rising to the surface with the last draftman rescued, interposed, you never cared for George Sampson, Bella. Apostrophe, and did I say I did, miss? Apostrophe, apostrophe, then, pouting again, with the curls in her mouth. George Sampson was very fond of me, and admired me very much, and put up with everything I did to him. Apostrophe, you were rude enough to him, apostrophe, Lavinia again interposed. And did I say I wasn't, miss? I am not setting up to be sentimental about George Sampson. I only say George Sampson was better than nothing. Apostrophe, you didn't show him that you thought even that. Apostrophe, Lavinia again interposed. You are a chit and a little idiot. Apostrophe, returned Bella, or you wouldn't make such a dolly speech. What did you expect me to do? Wait till you are a woman, and don't talk about what you don't understand. You only show your ignorance. Apostrophe then, whimpering again, and at intervals biting the curls, and stopping to look how much was bitten off. It's a shame. There never was such a hard case. I shouldn't care so much if it wasn't so ridiculous. It was ridiculous enough to have a stranger coming over to marry me, whether he liked it or not. It was ridiculous enough to know what an embarrassing meeting it would be, and how we never could pretend to have an inclination of our own, either of us. It was ridiculous enough to know I shouldn't like him. How could I like him, left to him in a will, like a dozen of spoons, with everything cut and dried beforehand, like orange chips. Talk of orange flowers indeed. I declare again it's a shame. Those ridiculous points would have been smoothed away by the money, for I love money, and want money, want it dreadfully. I hate to be poor, and we are degradingly poor, offensively poor, miserably poor, beastly poor. But here I am, left with all the ridiculous parts of the situation remaining, and, added to them all, this ridiculous dress. And if the truth was known, when the Harmon murder was all over the town, and people were speculating on its being suicide, I dare say those impudent wretches at the clubs and places made jokes about the miserable creatures, having preferred a watery grave to me. It's likely enough they took such liberties. I shouldn't wonder. I declare it's a very hard case indeed, and I am a most unfortunate girl. The idea of being a kind of a widow, and never having been married. And the idea of being as poor as ever after all, and going into black, besides, for a man I never saw, and should have hated as far as he was concerned, if I had seen. Apostrophe, apostrophe, the young lady's lamentations were checked at this point by a knuckle, knocking at the half-open door of the room. The knuckle had knocked two or three times already, but had not been heard. Who is it? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mrs. Wilfer, in her act of parliament manner. Enter. Apostrophe, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.